Okay, so I remember watching a random episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Is it the
And
musical episode? Because that's the only one I've ever seen.
I don't know what episode it is or it isn't.
You would know if it was the musical one, so it's not.
I didn't watch hardly any Buffy. All I remember is they had like an orc on the show, who I guess came from a clan or group of orcs. And like he was the only one that could make music. Like they didn't have a concept of what music was, but he did. And he was like a shifty salesman of some kind or something or other. So I that scene for whatever reason is always stuck in my brain. And it got me thinking today about Craig. Is Craig kind of like orcs have music innately. But Craig is just a special case where he has special music that he likes?
I
Or is it
don't.
that he's like, is he bred different? Like, is he just built different because he has a flute or a lute?
Well,
Or is he just a dumb orc?
I mean, yeah, he's a dumb orc because he has a flute rather than playing the drums like every other orc in his clan. By the way, I had to Google this, the fact that you even mentioned orcs with Buffy. That didn't sound correct, but
Well, I don't remember. He was green.
I mean, I think there was an episode with orcs. That's sort of what popped up on the wiki. So,
Don't know.
I don't know.
Anyway, Shelley is here.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Shelly. It's been a while.
I know.
Who
And
are
you're full.
you?
I am the Grumpy Dungeon Master Jay. And who is Shelly?
The grumpy dungeon wife? Oh.
That's no.
The rambunctious redhead.
Fair enough.
We'll go with that.
All
All right, we got another redhead on here. You're outnumbered, Waples. Other
No, I'm not. No, I'm
Waples.
not. I still have a soul. I win.
That's going to get confusing. I call him Waples all the time, so.
Well, I'm hoping you'll at least call me Shelley, and that
Yeah.
should narrow it down.
I will try my best.
We'll see
Better
what happens.
than calling you other Waples.
Yes.
Well, so this is the Grumpy Dungeon Masters, and the reason I have my wife on is because she backed the Crooked Moon, a Kickstarter.
Also, like I
And
did.
also like you did, she spent like $1,000 of my money out of her wallet, and actually I think she just paid for it herself. I don't know.
I did.
Okay. And she got the playtest material, and I want to talk about it. And you got the playtest material.
Yeah, I did 20 minutes ago.
Yep.
Thanks for
And
that, at least. I mean, I did at least have I had 20 minutes to look over a couple of things, so.
yeah. But anyways, since both of you backed it, and both of you have access to the playtest material innately, and they did say that they don't want us distributing it, so we're not going to link anything on our Discord or anything like that at all. But I did want to talk about some awesome stuff that is in their playtest material and just kind of like give our thoughts about how they're going, whether it's really good or really bad or this, that, and the other thing. And since Shelly's here and she bought it, she could read it to us. That way I don't have to read anything because my throat hurts
And you can't read.
and I can't
Yeah.
read.
Yes.
I can't read. But beyond that, I don't really honestly want to talk about the Unearthed Arcana that came out a little while ago that we're behind the times
Yeah,
on because
I was looking at it 5 minutes ago, because we had 5 minutes, and I was My mind it just blanked out. I was like, I don't care.
it's all vaguely better than it was before, but it's still needless changes that I don't think are really deserved. The only thing that is cool of note is that it is coming out in May 21st, and all the local LGSs that I've spoken to have always stopped buying Magic the Gathering, or sorry, have stopped buying Dungeons and Dragons products, and basically not because they don't think they could sell anything, but no one's going to buy anything, so they stopped buying all the new books, and I'm just going to wait until May.
The player's handbook will sell very, very well.
In May.
Yeah, in May. The stuff before that, no, it's not going to sell hardly at all. And obviously it won't if they're not buying it to sell it.
No. So I'm kind of disappointed by all that, but I guess that's just the way it is. You know, we're in the middle of an edition change, and I got to convince my players to swap over to the new edition so we can keep using D&D Beyond. And they're going to go,
no.
And then I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, I'm going to have to figure something out.
You're going to keep running 5th edition and not 5.5. You know, the same thing that all of us did when 4th edition came out. We just kept running 3.5.
That's just the weird thing. Is like, on one hand, I understand, but it depends on how easy it's going to be. And you talked last week about the VTT and how that one professor guy was able to get a sneak peek on everything. And
yeah, Professor Dungeon Master and Steven Glicker from Roll for Combat both got to play around with it.
And
Professor Dungeon Master actually put his video out about it today.
I did watch that. And that nothing that he talked about made me want to just jump in and start using that new VTT.
He didn't go very in-depth with his review on it because he was talking about a bunch of other stuff as well. But Steven Glicker got into pretty deep details.
But it doesn't... Ultimately, what I'm saying is it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how great they come out with the game. It's got to basically be good enough to make me want to leave what I'm currently using and already established in, okay, for their system. And I don't think that they have given me good enough reason to jump ship yet.
Not yet. I think it's, and I've said it before, it's a matter of wait till the thing comes out, try it then, and then you can actually decide. You don't have any information on it yet.
Right, I don't have any information on it yet. I mean, I have what he does, and their concept of what they were doing with the make it like Dwarven Forge and make really cool spell effects go off and stuff like that, and that's a little microtransaction yet to death. I get that. That's okay. That's kind of cool. But it would have to feel and be so seamless for me to convince my wife to move to that system.
Yeah, so. That's fair. There's no chance in hell I could ever convince my players to move to it, so I understand.
Well, we all know your special case.
Yeah, my players and myself will not play online because it's not generally fun. So.
I'm pretty sure I could nag my wife enough to play it.
If it's easy.
Nope. Nah.
I'd have to do a lot of nagging, a lot of promising of like, oh, I'll do the chores something.
Nah.
If it's really good, then you just show her.
I just learned how to do all this stuff. Like, not that long ago. And then I'd have to relearn all of it? I don't know.
Wouldn't be relearning it. It would just be learning to do more stuff.
See what they have to come up with? It doesn't matter how cool it is. It's still just like, I ain't got the time or the effort.
I mean, look, they are building this thing not for us old folks. They are building it. They're building it for the 15-year-olds. That's what it is for.
Well, I'm not 15.
I'm not either. That's why I don't even play online. Anyway. So do we want to talk about some of this Crooked Moon stuff?
Yeah.
Get into it. So the little bit that has been released, at least the stuff I have access to, is one monster. There is a warlock patron. There are a couple of magic items. There's, I don't know how many subclasses, but there's a number of subclasses. 5 or 6, I think, as well as 5. Okay, there's several of the races that are available, and then what else? And then a bunch of spells. And I really wish I'd had more time to actually look at the spells, because I have not. But let's start at the top with the monster, the one that they released, because this is the first thing I looked at, and immediately I'm like, I absolutely love this thing.
The Hypnovulfin?
Yes. The Hypnovulfin.
So Shelly, read us what the Hypnovulfin is.
Stories of wolf attacks can often be heard in taverns from the mouths of boastful men, or as warnings told to quiet children before bed. For the Hypnovulfin, there are no such cautionary tales. Those who manage to survive an encounter with the Hypnovulfin keep such stories to themselves, afraid to share what they truly saw. Hypnovulfin are wolves transformed by the Crooked Moon's twisted light. Howling wolves that stare too deeply into its wicked face become transfixed. The pale light fills their widening eyes, their appetite expands tenfold, and they learn to use the moon's hypnotic glow to charm their prey. Lupine predators. Filled with the madness of their desire, the Hypnovulfin's body, fur, eyes, and jaws grow to match their terrible hunger. Their eyes glow with maddening yellow moonlight, unblinking. Hypnovulfins can only be found in the dark woods where they spawn and hunt alone at night when the moon glows brightest. Charm. Hypnovulfin rely on their cunning, magical charm, and strength to hunt their prey. Soon after its transformation, a Hypnovulfin quickly gets used to getting what it wants, meat. Unlike typical wolves, they must rely on pack advantage, signs of weakness, or isolation. The Hypnovulfin knows how to use its hypnotic talent to feed without trouble. Rumors. So afraid are most villages of these fearsome predators, commoners refuse to speak their name. Convincing a survivor to tell their story can prove difficult. Those who lived may have lost friends or family, and retelling their part often means confronting the guilt of their cowardice or admitting they succumbed to the Hypnovulfin's delights.
So right there, right out of the gate, and I don't know if they're going to do this for all the monsters, but at least they did for this one that they put out, and maybe for just for the bigger, more unique monsters. They got what they are, how they operate, where they're found, and then rumors about them.
Yep.
And just that flavor was just missing in 5th edition. Like, there was some data someplace, but definitely not in the Monsters of the Multiverse, which is pretty much the only thing you can buy now for the Monster Manual. And there's just this background data to these monsters just isn't there. And it may just come down to word count, because, I mean, this is just one monster. It is a CR5, so it is a pretty big monster, but...
That's adorable.
In retrospect, you can make a one-shot around this. You can do a lot of story.
I mean, I guess if you're running first-level characters or something, sure.
Yeah.
Who would run a one-shot at first level? I don't know, but okay.
But still, what I'm saying is, like, you look at the Duergar Mind Master, it has a paragraph, you know?
Oh, yeah.
The other Duergar have half a sentence, you know?
Yeah, this thing gets half a page.
This thing gets 2 pages.
Well, no, it got half a page just in the lore.
Right.
Then it gets a full page on its stats, and this thing is loaded down with stats, of which they work very beautifully in unison, and it's literally describing exactly how this thing is going to try to beat you in combat, of which I'm a big fan of how they wrote this thing up. As well, they're still playing on the history of the Big Bad Wolf, which is what this is supposed to be. The name of its first ability is called What Big Eyes You Have. Then What Big Teeth You Have is the next one. So, but the idea behind this thing is that it hypnotizes you and then it devours you. And the one thing that made this really stand out to me and make me like it right out of the gate was when I read What Big Eyes You Have. I'm not going to read the whole of it, but I'll read enough. When a creature starts its turn within 60 feet of the wolf and can see its eyes, the creature must succeed on a DC 17 wisdom saving throw or be charmed by an illusion for 1 minute. While charmed, the creature sees the Hypnovulfin as a beloved figure from its past and will not willingly take actions that could harm it. The charmed condition ends if the creature is swallowed by the Hypnovulfin or by an external source such as Lesser Restoration or similar magic. This is very old school feel. When you are charmed to this thing, you're just charmed. There's no getting out of it other than continuing through the rest of it, which is to walk towards it until this thing eats you.
Yeah.
Like, there's no save every round. This is, you're screwed. I love it. Once you get devoured, you pop out of it, then you can attack from inside it. Like, this thing is still easily killable. I'm a little concerned by the fact that this thing hunts in packs. A whole bunch of Hypnovulfins could be a problem for any group.
Nah, you'll be fine.
Oh, I would definitely run this. I would absolutely use this guy.
The only thing that I have as like a critique for it, it's not like its stats or anything are weird or terrible. It's fairly balanced, ish. See, a DC 17 for a level 5 character is really hard to make, especially since you basically have to make that charm save at the beginning of every turn, period. And there's no, like, once you succeed from it once, you're immune to it for 24 hours kind of thing.
You can always close your eyes and attack at disadvantage.
Right. So that's what I was going to say. Is the only, like... My only comment of this is there's a lot of extra text that they're adding in, and this kind of goes through our thing, like the spells and everything, where it says when a creature starts your turn within 60 feet of the wolf and can see its eyes. We don't need to say that. You can say when a creature starts its turn within 60 foot and can see it. You know, you don't have to... And can see its eyes.
Well, no,
you don't have
to be specific
to seeing its eyes.
You do, because if you're behind this creature, then you're not affected by it.
There is no behind a creature in D&D 5e.
If I'm running this game and I'm running that, if you are behind it and cannot see its eyes, then you're not affected.
Okay. In the base, raw version of D&D 5e, but I'm telling you, this is my complaint. You have to set up a lot of, okay, well, there's now fronts of minis and backs of minis when you play Crooked Moon. That's too much. Maybe they do add that. Maybe they haven't added that. Maybe this is something that just kind of came out to them. But you as a seasoned DM can probably run that, but if someone's just picking up Crooked Moon for the first time, they're like, okay, now they can't see. So now I have facing is a thing when it never was before.
Oh, God forbid that a DM have to make a decision.
It's more the compounding issue of having to put that on top of a lot of people, you know?
Get better as a DM. Learn to make choices. Learn to tell your players this or that.
Facing has never been a thing in 5e.
In my games, it's always been a thing. So, okay. I understand, but my point stands. If a DM can't determine that... That, you know, they can say, no matter where you're at, you see its eyes. That is an acceptable answer. Or they can say, if you're behind it, you can't see its eyes. That is also an acceptable answer. The DM has to make that decision.
It's too much. And they need to go back and they need to just trim down a little bit of stuff to make it in line with the more 5e raw. Unless facing and directing is a thing for their system and their players, and they expect everyone to basically have that from here on out, then that's cool, but that wasn't in the playtest.
I mean, well, don't beholders have a facing? Don't they turn off magic in front of them?
They have a cone attack.
Right, that a cone equals facing. Like
they're the only
they have
monster
to be
that has a cone. That
well, now there's a second attached. One. There's a second one where facing matters.
Then if that's the case... then you need to write that into the monster that way. Every monster within a 30-foot cone of the face of the monster...
I know what you're trying to say. Yeah.
Then you need to put that text in there that there's a 30-foot cone that will charm people. And if that's the case, then that's great. Perfect. Put that in there that way. Don't invent something that is not a part of the base D&D unless you're adding that into the whole system altogether where facing is now a big thing. Because now backstab has a whole different meaning.
Yeah,
nope, I mean, you're in the front of them. Can't
I backstab. Mean, honestly, them adding that just makes me like it a lot more. Because
I don't think that they did, though. That's my whole thing. I think they're writing it that way when it's not built that way.
Because they understand that people can make a decision and say it works this way or that.
No. I don't think it even crossed their minds when they wrote it.
Anyway, well, probably not, but why would it? Because people can just make this decision and move on. So anyway, the other part about the Hypnovulfin I wanted to talk about is that...
Actually, hold on real quick, since I have Shelly here. Shelly, since you wanted to DM this, to playtest it, how does that make you feel?
I 100% agree with Jay. Like, it's in there, and it says you can see its eyes, and the whole point of this creature is it hypnotizes you, and you have to be able to see its eyes, and it would make sense that if you're in the forest, like, even if you scroll down a little bit further, it says secret. If you see the moon not just in the sky, but doubled in the bushes or in the darkness between the trees, quickly avert your gaze. Like, this whole thing revolves around its eyes. So it's very important to, like, detail that in your description of the setup, but also to kind of maintain that throughout the combat. So it's... I understand where you're coming from, Christopher, but what Jay says makes perfect sense for this particular setup. With this particular creature, because it revolves literally around seeing its eyes, you have to designate that. Regardless of what the raw rules say, you have to designate that for this to make it work and just to make sense. If you didn't, then your players are going to be more confused, I think, than anything else, as to be like, well, I can see it, but I'm standing behind it. Like, you're gonna create more problems than you would have if you just said, if you're standing over there, you can see it. And if you're standing over here, you can't. And just leaving it at that.
Well, there you go. For a person who has... I don't think... Have you ever run a game before, Shelly?
Yes, 2 times, I think.
Okay. But for a very brand new DM, mm-hmm. that's not complicated.
Mm-mm.
I'd just say if you're going to follow the 5e, you play 5e raw, or you add a cone vision to it and just call it a day.
All right. The other part about the Hypnovulfin is the tender tummy, and I don't need to go into the basics of how it works, but it's the fact that this thing actually uses vulnerable. There's a thing in here. The Hypnovulfin's AC increases to 18 for the attack, and it becomes vulnerable to slashing and piercing damage dealt by the attack. So this is like one of what, I don't know how many monsters in 5e actually have vulnerable, but it's almost none.
Well, it's not even that it adds vulnerable, it adds a weak point. And there are very few monsters that have weak points in 5e. I like weak points, as long as they're not, you know, attack the flashing spot for massive damage on
a
crab.
Yeah.
You know.
Not like a fan of that, but...
Yeah. The only well, I would say the only other weak point that I know of is actually on the Duergar Hammerer.
And, oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I forgot about that guy.
And no one ever does anything with that. But because he actually swells up, you know, and you kind of have to state that he swells up a little bit, people can start attacking the tummy for, you know, extra attacks and stuff. I don't know why it's vulnerable to slashing and piercing. Why not just slashing? But
I don't know.
He's not going to pop.
I just love the fact that they actually...
Hammers do a lot of damage too, you know.
Like, the very first monster I see for this setting it has vulnerability makes me happy. Alright, I'll let somebody else pick the other stuff we talk about, because that was really the only thing I had a lot of time to look at and I wanted to talk about anyway.
That's as far as you got.
I did look at the Horned King stuff, and I started scrolling through it, and I'm like, yay, Warlock. Like, that's where I got with that.
Like I said, I don't want to get too much into like a lot of the gritty specifics of everything, you know?
Yeah.
The unique thing that they did with the Warlock is they gave it another pact. Okay, they gave it Pact of the Horn. At third level, you can choose Pact of the Blade, Pact of the Chain, or Pact of the Tome. For your loyalty, the Horn King amends the pact that you choose in the following ways. Depending on your choice, the pact you choose still counts as an Eldritch invocation prerequisites. So, you choose Pact of the Horn, and then you overwrite one of the other pacts.
Yeah, you basically, yeah, it seems like you're taking those other pacts, but there's alterations. Like Pact of the Blade, if you do that one, you have to choose a dagger as your weapon, but then the one that you do get is going to get other effects to it. So that's kind of neat.
It's neat, but I don't know how I feel about that kind of thing, you know? I'd rather just have a whole unique pact that does something, you know?
Yeah, that would have been my preference as well. Not one that's just going to sort of alter the ones that already exist.
But I think they kind of did it just so they can stay a little bit in line with the current pact system and not deviate too far or too much. I don't know how much they thought about like people running this through like D&D Beyond or other systems out there, but like, now you can still choose Pact of the Blade, but you just get this little thing that you just have to remember to add on top of Pact of the Blade. Ha ha. That's our, you know, way of working around the issue kind of thing. If they do try to like be a part of like Foundry or Roll 20, now they have to kind of like redesign the whole system that's already put in place for people to have specific unique packs. Now they have to have them choose a pact and then be adjusted, and there's a lot more coding on the back end to work with this.
I know some companies will take it into account, but I don't think most of these companies that are making 5e supplements are even taking that into account. Like, it's, you know, they're making a role-playing game or setting in this case. They're not thinking about, oh, how would somebody implement this into online?
Well, I mean, they're a big online group, so I'd be very curious as to why they chose to do it this way. I mean, at the end of the day, like, if I write something like this, I'm not going to ever consume it's going to be online at all, because I'm just me. I'm not a $4 million Kickstarter.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I'd rather just be an actual pack so they could add that in and work with the existing architecture that's out there, and something instead of something that's so unique, kind of pointlessly unique, that it makes it so I can't, you know, integrate this over easily.
You probably don't know the answer, but how do they run their game online if they're running these things online? Is it through Roll20? Is it through D&D Beyond? Is it something else?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, the integrations that they're offering as part of the Kickstarter is, like, I just did my backer kit survey, like, right before we started recording. They were offering for Roll20, Foundry, and one other one that I did not know. I didn't recognize. So they're going to have the options there for it, but I still get, like, kind of the vibe that the majority of this is expected to be in person, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like a lot of this is expected that you're going to have a group sitting around with you and going over all this together. So if that's the case, then I think it's fine the way they have it set up, where you've got just this little extra part to remember. I don't feel like it's expected to be initially online and then, okay, I guess if you want to play in person too, you can, that kind of a thing.
It's like the
VTT integration was not even like a low level target or stretch goal or anything like that. So that was definitely just a nice bonus that they threw in.
Yeah, it was pretty high, I think.
And with Roll 20, assuming it hasn't changed too much, like when I was running it, we all just had our character sheets in front of us. Like, we just had physical character sheets. So
I mean, you can VTT that way. You know, that's not an issue. And it's perfectly fine. I mean, we did it once that way before we started using D&D Beyond. But I know, like, you can, if you have the funding, you can just hire somebody to do the back end coding to add this stuff as a module into the system and just be done with it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not much of an issue. It's just kind of a weird. Huh. I wonder why they're doing that. Is it just to be unique? Are they thinking about this, or are they just kind of like, you know, shooting from the hip and just hoping that everyone's gonna do pen and paper around the table? Because this isn't the only time that something unique like this has changed something, and we'll get to that a little bit later too.
Yeah, and maybe they've seen some of the previous Kickstarters who were trying to do VTT stuff and all of the nightmare that surrounds that. I know the Sky Raiders of Abraxas, like, that is their biggest stopping point, because they were going to have this whole online thing and implement it and all, and it's just been, from my understanding, a bit of a nightmare for them.
Well, they specifically went out to design apps and shit.
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I know. Like, they were going above and beyond, and, you know, that's causing all sorts of issues.
That's scope creep, if I ever saw it.
Yeah, yeah. And it's shooting a little too high, I think.
Anything from the Warlock, sweetie, that you liked?
As somebody that likes Warlocks, I thought it was a very cool, like, flavor of Warlock. It's very, very spooky. It's very folk horror. It's right in line with what the rest of the thing seems to be like. There was something I thought that was really cool about it that I haven't looked at this one. I looked at the other one. I haven't looked at this one in a while. I thought Withering Hex was really cool as an Eldritch invocation option. You have to have Eldritch Blast, and it says the first time you hit a creature with Eldritch Blast on your turn, you can choose to bestow a minor blessing upon an ally you can see within 30 feet of the target. The ally gains temporary hit points equal to half the force damage dealt by the blast. Temp hit points last until the start of your next turn. I thought that was kind of cool, because I feel like a lot of times Warlocks are very... they do their thing, and they don't really seem to be as... let's help everybody else in the group, not a lot of support, just kind of a, I'm going to stand over here and I'm going to start blasting and that's it. So I thought that was kind of a neat thing, where they just kind of had a little, here, you're going to help the group too, instead of just be spooky over there in the corner.
While it's a neat thing, I don't know that it really fits with the class.
I can agree with that. I thought it doesn't really feel right on brand. I just thought it was a cool little thing.
It doesn't fit the Horn King.
Yeah. But
that's just a new invocation option that anyone can use. It's not it's not regulated to the Horn King. Yeah, because it absolutely does not feel like, hey, talk to the goat skull, I'll give you 10 hit points.
Right, yeah. Yeah, the little bit of lore, or whatever you want to call it, at the top of the Horn King, I do like. Like, it's the idea of you harness the force of your own primal instinct through simple tools and rituals, charm and wither your foes, and grant powerful boons to your allies. I don't know about the boons to your allies, but just sort of the feel of this thing is it's very primal, almost druid-esque, while being a warlock. So, kind of a neat feel, and it fits very much in line with the whole idea of Crooked Moon, sort of the folk tales and folklore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what's weird though is you have to have a rap battle with the class every time you want to go into a house. You know what to do? You got to drink all their beer. It's really weird. I don't know where they got that from.
Yep, I'm pretty sure that's a bard subclass.
Dude, that would be a great subclass. The Roughhauser. They had three magic items there, but nothing
they're,
really.
They're all, yeah, they're all potions.
One, the one that was really weird was it was a legendary potion, okay? And all it does is give you advantage on your next three death saving throws.
Yep.
Is that really a legendary potion?
Yes. Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
The reason, I know that sounds kind of weak, but it's, you drink this and it lasts forever. So
I guess
you just drink this thing and it doesn't matter if it's 6 years down the road, it's still active.
But it's only your next three death saving throws.
Sure.
And those, I mean, My players make like 17 death saving throws every hour when we fly.
Well, that's you. My players make like 3 death saving throws per campaign.
What?
That's not accurate, but some of them that's accurate. Muffin, that's not accurate. He makes death saving throws often.
If my players haven't had a death saving throw within the first 5 minutes, we're not playing D&D.
I mean, you're playing 5e. You're barely playing D&D as it is.
That's a difference of opinion.
Yes. Anyway, moving on. The next one was all of the subclasses.
The big playtest, the one that we just went over was the one anyone can go look at right now, I think.
Oh, okay.
It was on the Kickstarter. You could just download it. The playtest material you had to get through the Discord.
Yeah.
So this is the more specific stuff. I guess just Shelly, go through the subclasses, just kind of read the general description of what they are, and not the abilities or everything, just what the subclass is, what it is.
I mean, honestly, yeah, you can just read the name, and it gives a reasonable idea on them.
Okay. So it's 5 subclasses for Bard, Cleric, Druid, Monk, and Paladin. So like one for each one, I think. The races are really cool. I'd like to talk more about that if we can later, but for the subclasses, you've got College of Whistles for the Bard, which is basically a hobo.
Yep. I want to talk about this guy, by the way.
Yes. The Harvest Domain, which looks very normal.
It almost looks like anything else. Yeah, it's almost Christmassy.
Yes.
It's that movie with Nicolas Cage where they had to sacrifice someone to the bees.
Not the bees!
It's not the Wicker Man.
No. It is! Gods of the Harvest and the Worshipers hold the manure to cycle the harvest. It's all about you gotta sacrifice someone to the bees or else...
Like, I'm looking at the artwork for this, and honestly, that girl on here, she looks like one of the spirits that would have visited Scrooge.
After that is Druid's Circle of the Old Ways, which is, I'm sure Christopher wants to talk about that one.
Yeah, I do.
Monk is Way of the Pestilent Haze, which is just a monk that spreads disease.
I love it. Praise Nurgle.
Yeah.
Paladin is Oath of Castigation.
Which is a witch hunter.
Yes. And that's it for the subclasses, yes.
Okay, so back to
the best one's the hobo. We all agree.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely the best one. The College of Whistles, and we're not going to go through all of the stuff that this guy does, but I wanted to focus very much so on the fact that so at third level you can call forth hobo haints, vagabond spirits. The fact that they use the word haint tells me this is incredibly Southern. Like that is that's a word you hear in Mississippi. I absolutely love that they made this thing. I mean, it screams of the guy who meets the devil at the crossroads at midnight to gain superpowers. Hobos from one town to the other on a train. And by the way, this guy actually, he has a train whistle as his focus. So, like, everything about this is very Southern folklore.
Yeah, it's really well designed. It's like one of the ones that really stands out as being wholly unique to the setting, as well as I can see this in the kind of horror setting that they want as well too.
Like, oh yeah.
It's not too crazy tech-wise. It's just a dude with a banjo. I mean, he does summon a train. I mean, trains are usually either they do exist in your fantasy campaign or they don't.
Well, in Crooked Moon, they do.
Yeah, in Crooked Moon, they do. I don't even mind trains existing in Forgotten Realms because it's just...
I would tap the fuck out if there was trains in Forgotten Realms.
Dude, they got freaking walking clockwork robots. You gotta give them trains.
Tapping out on trains.
They got airships, for Christ's sakes, and floating cities.
Yep. Not trains, though.
So it's okay if they have a city and they fill the city up and fly the city up and down the Sword Coast dropping off cargo, but fuck you if it put it on a wheel and on a rail.
That is correct.
Okay.
The steam engine doesn't
The moment there's a steam engine.
There's a steam engine in Waterdeep Dragon Heist.
Well, I'm tapping out then. I never played Water Heist.
Water Heist?
Whatever it was. So the fact that this guy, the types of haints that he summons, it's the middle one that kills me. So he summons the Scamp. The bottom one is called the Sad Sack, and the middle one is called the Grump. So I would absolutely have this thing if I played this character or had anybody playing this character in my campaign. That haint is going to show up, and it is going to look like you, Christopher.
What does the Grump do?
When a creature inside the Grump's aura damages a creature, you may spend your reaction to deal additional necrotic damage equal to your bardic inspiration die to that same creature. All creatures of your choice within the Grump's aura have advantage on charisma intimidation checks and strength saving throws. That's accurate.
I'll be honest, the hobbit does kind of look like me.
Yeah, a little bit. A little short, but yeah.
It does seem to have your genetics.
I'm going to have to find you, what is that, a wheat stalk? Let you put it in your mouth.
So, the one that's just like, they need to bring this back to the drawing board and reevaluate everything about it, was the Circle of the Old Ways Druid. I don't mind the idea and the direction that they were going with it. I really like that, in fact. It's just, what they have is just way too much, okay? Starting with their second level feature, Bow and Branch, that says you are
bow.
Tough.
Bow.
It's like an echo. You are tough as the elder word you revere. You gain the following benefits. As a bonus action, you grow a club and shield from your arms. You cannot drop these or be disarmed unless you're incapacitated. You can dismiss as a bonus action. The club is magical, and you can use your spellcasting ability for the attack and damage roll of the damage rolls of the melee attacks, and the weapon's damage die becomes a d8. The shield functions as a normal shield, granting you +2 AC. While you use this feature, you can ignore the semantic components of spells. And you have advantage on constitution saving throws. Good lord, that's a lot for a level 2 ability.
Is it?
Yes. First off, advantage on constitution saving throws, so now you don't have to pick any feat, you don't have to put extra points in the con, you just have advantage now, okay?
Alright.
You know, screw getting that at level 4, or innately at level 6, you know? You just have it at level 2 when you have this thing as a bonus action on you. And then on top of that, now you have a magic weapon. I know other classes get it at 6, but you're special. You get it at 2. And then on top of that, you have a club and a shield that can't be disarmed. Okay. This needs to kind of like grow as the character gets stronger. Maybe start off with being able to summon the weapon and the shield and not being disarmed. That's a lot for level 2, but that's a good default. Even adding in the ignore semantic components of spells, that's maybe a little too much, but you don't need everything else. Give that when you use bow and branch at level 6, now that weapon's magical and you have advantage or something like that. It just all that for level 2 is a lot. Okay.
The fact that you get a magic club that deals a d8 damage and you get a shield. It's an ability that will get used at level 2. And by level 4 or 5, it'll never be used again.
No, absolutely not. Like this whole thing is built around you using that over and over and over again.
I need to read the rest of it. Like, if there's more to it that make you want to use that, then okay. But if that's all,
you make bonus attacks. You use bonus actions to make extra attacks. You can entangle people with the shield and your club. And then that's a level 6 ability. There was something else too, I think.
Well, the level 2, it has two features. It has the bound branch, and then it has the wood woes, which kind of builds on it. So, I mean, I'm not too familiar with how it sounds OP. You know, I don't know a whole lot about building and writing this kind of thing. So it sounds OP to me, but when you kind of add it all together, it does seem to be too much, and it would be something that you would continue to run with. Like, I see where Jay is coming from. Does it make sense? Some of the stuff is you're not going to use it once you kind of outgrow it, but it feels like the way that this this subclass is being built is so that you can be this tough stick and shield that just stands in front of everybody, like, the entire campaign.
Yeah. You get natural armor, your AC is 13, plus your wisdom, plus the bow and branch shield. The first creature you hit on your attack is coated, each turn is coated in Elder Sap, which hinders their attacks. So they'll turn next turn, the target has advantage on any attack rolls against you.
Yeah,
I get the idea of building this big tank, but it's just like, this is a lot at level 2. It needs to be spread out a little bit more.
Perhaps. I need to see, like, it only goes up to level 6 on the playtest. I would want to see the entirety of it. It does seem like they're building this thing to be off of that club and shield. So that I can understand. I don't care that it gets that at level 2. That's not a big deal to me.
It shouldn't be magical at level 2.
Eh, whatever. Magic doesn't
level
matter.
Level 6 is when things become magical. I'm going to go, that's not how the raw works, but that's how the system works. Is
most players have a magic
come
weapon
in at certain levels.
Most players have magic weapons by level 3. So, okay, he's off by one level.
He's off by 3 levels, because level 6 is when people get it innately. So,
get it innately, yeah, but okay. The only thing that I'm seeing that I have a real problem with at level 2 under the wood woes is you gain natural armor, your AC becomes 13, plus your wisdom modifier. You may still benefit from your bow and branch. So assuming they have we'll go with the 17 wisdom or whatever. So that's a 16, that's an 18 armor class. And then if you have a dex modifier, you could potentially be 20, 21 armor class at level 2.
I think that replaces your armor calculation, so I don't think you add dex to that.
I mean, dex is generally just added, so I would have to. I would if it was casting the spell. What is the spell that gives you
major armor? You still add dex to that.
Yeah, so like I would have to assume the way this is written that it's going to add dex. So you're looking at a 20-21 armor class if you built your character that way at level 2. That's really high.
It is. So I just I like the idea of this thing. I like where it's going. It seems a little too much. It needs to be kind of tuned down a little bit.
Yeah, maybe. That's why they have this playtest. So
I mean, the word was at least is linked to the wild shape charges, which is good. Like, I would play this druid in a heartbeat. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to hear for a whole campaign, God damn it, Christopher's killing everybody the first goddamn round all by himself. Again.
Yeah, the fact is that it does. It uses your wild shapes to get the wood woes, which gives you a bunch of different abilities. But they last for 10 minutes. Now, the only problem with that is, if I'm correct with druids, don't you get wild shapes back on a short rest?
I think so.
In the new UA, yeah.
Yeah. So if you get a couple of wild shapes going along at some point, and basically every fight you're going to have that stuff active.
Yep.
So this definitely use a good looking over from what I'm seeing.
And like, I get it. I mean, they kind of designed this. I was like, oh shit, now they can't cast spells with somatic components. Okay. All right.
Yeah, I mean, if you're turning your hand into a goddamn club and a shield, you're not casting spells anyway. You're there to beat things up.
Just concentration and verbal spells. Got it. That's the downside.
Yeah.
You know, like the classes can have downsides. They don't always have to be barbarians go into berserker rage. They can't cast spells.
Yep.
Period. In a story.
I mean, when you're shapeshifted as a druid, you aren't casting shit.
So I don't know. I like it. Tune it down a little bit. Again, praise Nurgle, Way of the Pestilent Haze. I'm playing that.
I actually am a little disappointed in the artwork for this one, though. That
should I think it's perfect.
Oh, no, everything is perfect except it needs to be a Skaven.
No. It's just unassuming, really hot lady that's like, hey, I'm a monk from a traveling village. Oh, sweet. Yes, thank you. How you doing? I'm fine. You have herpes now. What?
Here, drink this. You'll be fine. It'll cure you. Oh, now you got gonorrhea.
Oh, you're going to die. That's the cure. Damn it. So, yeah, I really like that. I really like this class.
I want to read over it at some point. But
Scurvy spread. Level 6 ability. When you use your Step of the Wind, you can spread your plague to nearby enemies. Until the end of your turn, any creature that comes within 5 feet of you must make a con save or be plagued. You can use this feature a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest. Now, the best part about that is the plagues. Vermin Claws. You may choose slashing damage instead of bludgeoning damage for unarmed strikes. Miasmatic Plague. A plagued creature must make a constitution saving throw at the start of each of its turns, or have disadvantage on attack rolls and ability checks, and take additional martial arts die of necrotic damage from your unarmed strikes until the start of its next turn.
I need to go over something that you get at third level when you take Gift of Pestilence.
What?
They are confirming what everybody who's ever lived in a city already knows. All right, you can communicate simple concepts to vermin such as rats, pigeons, and insects. So they are confirming that pigeons are in fact just rats with wings.
I mean, yeah, right? Did anyone not think that?
Yes. Yes, there are people who think pigeons are adorable, and if you've
pigeons are adorable.
They are adorable. They are also rats with wings. I mean, rats can be adorable too. Let's not get it wrong, but you got to realize they're just rats, man. They're just rats. Anyway,
Let's move into the races, since they have a plethora of amazing races with one very big glaring issue throughout most of them.
I'm here to listen. Actually, go ahead and read. I'll be right back.
Read what they are and what their creature type is. All of them get the increased 1 ability score by 2 and a different score by 1. But you don't have to go into the different, more specific stuff.
I'll give like a little description of what it looks like, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. So for lineages, you've got the first one is Ashborn, which is a creature type is a fiend, and it looks like a little goblin with a scorpion tail. It's very cute. The next one is an Azureborn, which is a humanoid. It kind of looks like a cross between it's kind of like a nice harpy is what I figured it would be real close to. It's kind of nice looking, but looks like a harpy.
Mm-hmm.
Next you've got Bogborn, which is a creature type is a giant, which looks like just a really tall orc, I guess.
Troll. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a troll and orc. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. Then you've got Curseborn, which is a humanoid, which is, effectively is Worgen from World of Warcraft. And then you've got Deepborn, which is a humanoid, but like
they're so hot.
They're like what is that movie that Ron Perlman is in and he plays Hellboy? His friend that lives in the water. That's what it reminded.
Abraham Lincoln or whatever his name was.
I think it's Abe Sapien.
Abe Sapien, that's it, yes. Yeah.
That's what it looks like. And then they've got I'm going to pronounce it Gnarlborn because I think it's funny, but I guess it's Gnarlborn. creature type is a plant, and it's basically Groot. And then they've got Graveborn, which is undead, which just, I guess, is more like maybe like a sentient ghoul.
That's a ghoul artwork for sure, yeah.
Right. The really cool thing about that one is it can eat corpses, like the original undead from WoW could.
Like a ghoul.
Yes. And then my favorite one is Harvestborn, which is a humanoid jack-o'-lantern.
You're Jack Skellington.
Yes. And then the next one is Plagueborn, which is a humanoid, but it's a rat.
It's a Skaven, yeah.
And then Relicborn is an undead as a creature type, but it's it reminded me kind of a mummy, but I guess it's more like a Day of the Dead skeleton.
I mean, the artwork for it, it's just a skeleton.
It's a Day of the Dead skeleton.
It's a Day of the Dead skeleton. It's got like the face paint and stuff.
Yeah.
And like one of the, it's Eternal Party is one of the things for, and then Dance of Death and stuff like that. So I feel like that's kind of what they were leaning for.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, it's got Death Rattle. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Silkborn, which is a humanoid, but is like a spider person. It's very creepy. I don't like that one.
That one's amazing.
And then Stoneborn, which they don't have a picture of, but I think that's like a, it's a humanoid, but I think it's like a gargoyle.
It's a rock.
It's going to be a gargoyle because it's got abilities, Cathedral Guardian, Belfry Dive. Yeah. Like, that's obvious.
And then the last one, which I absolutely hate, is Threadborn. Its creature type is a construct, and it's basically a doll.
As a fan of the Puppet Master movies, this was my favorite. This was my favorite one by far.
No, thank you.
Like, if I could play any of these, that's the one, the Threadborn.
Yeah, I would say there's not a single miss on any of these races. Like, from a concept and design, they are all perfect. And they are exactly, they fit that Crooked Moon aesthetic that they said they were going to do. It looks really fantastic. The only problem that I foresee is that there's two big problems that I see with all these. They all have a lot of abilities. Generally, just for balance reasons, the races in 5th edition aren't that front-loaded with cool, unique abilities. And if they are, they eventually get nerfed. Like Yonti, they got nerfed out of non-existence, essentially, with Mordenkainen's release. So they have a lot of abilities, and they all do a lot of fantastic things. Which is great, I really like that, but there's a reason why they don't, for balance sake, and it's not making some classes just nigh unpickable all the time. And the other issue is that there's some classes in here that are not humanoid, like the Bogborn is a giant, the Ghoul is undead, the Puppet's a construct, and I don't know what the logic is behind why they don't have any non-humanoid races, other than that there are some spells that need to basically target humanoids for them to work. And there's a balance between that. Like, hold person is the earlier spell, then hold monster is a later control spell. So maybe that's not a real big concern in this setting, but that is just a thing I have to point out, because like that may be hard to balance around if you're trying to do things with. So now, like Ashborn, for example, anything that affects a fiend is going to affect that Ashborn, you know. So if you have a cleric that turns undead, well, your undead party members go running away.
Actually, very specifically with the undead, they all have turn immunity.
Yes,
but that just adds extra shit to it then. When like just what? Make them humanoid and you're done.
How you does that add extra stuff? It just means that, wow, you can't be turned.
I know, but just make them humanoid, then you don't have to give them turn immunity.
Yeah, but if I'm playing a skeleton and they tell me I'm humanoid, I'm calling bullshit.
Right. Then why do these undead have turn immunity and other undead don't?
Because you're special. I don't fucking know.
I don't like it. It needs to be all lined up. And
you want everything to be uniform and all the same, whereas that's not tabletoping. That's not role playing. That's not D&D. Like, everybody is a special snowflake in role playing games. You have to be. You're supposed to be. Like, every rule doesn't have to line up perfectly.
Yes, it does.
And I know coming from 4E and 5E, that's what you expect. But if you branch outside of those systems, you'll find there's not uniformity among rules throughout nearly every other system.
Everything has a box for everything.
Yeah, but like this makes it, the thing I really love about this, like, there are some of these races, I'm like, they don't really appeal to me as much as some of the other ones do. But the thing that's really cool is they're all really different, you know? And even if the things that make them different are silly things, like the Graveborn being able to eat corpses and the Harvestborn being able to turn into a literal scarecrow and nobody can tell whether or not it's a real person. Like, it's little fun things that make it different. So instead of it being, well, I know I want dark vision, so I have to take an elf, you know, because I want this also. Now you've got, just even in this playtest, you've got all these different things to choose from, where it's like, it's outside the meta, I guess, maybe that's the phrase I'm looking for. Like, you can make, there's all these combinations of stuff to do because everything is so different. It doesn't all have to fit in the same basic, all these humanoids do basically the same thing. Like, this makes it a lot different. And I don't have any experience outside of 5E, so I this is all new to me. But this looks really, really cool to be this varied, I think. Especially because it's all completely different.
Yeah. Like, I left running 5E because everything was the same. If I picked a paladin and I was a 7th level paladin, I was going to be exactly like every other 7th level paladin. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, this is still going to suffer from that because it's 5E, but at least all of the different races, they are all very unique. They all have their own gimmick they're sort of going for. And I'm really a fan of this. Mm-hmm. I wish they would do this. You know, I want customization more than 5E is willing to give. But at least this is just something new. It's something cool. I like the fact that they all have like a whole bunch of abilities, even if they're very minor. Like, oh, you know, the scarecrow can literally just pretend to be a scarecrow. It's never going to get used. It's not really particularly useful, but he has it. It's something he can do.
I mean, it's stuff that, like you said, like it's not really going to matter. You know, the Relic Born doesn't actually rest. They have to stay awake and tell stories and play music and dance for 4 hours a day. That's how they get their long rest instead of resting. Like, no one cares about that.
That's fun. That's fucking awesome. That's a role play thing.
Right. And a lot of that is kind of lost now that, you know, it's not as important to the story unless you're playing a really heavily role play driven campaign. And, you know, a lot of people don't do that, but like something like this could get people more interested in doing the role play part.
Yep. That's something that is missing, is role playing in a role playing game.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you better day of the dead dance face makeup when you play your character then. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, don't tempt me. I'd do it. So do we want to go over any of the spells or just sort of read off some of them?
Spells are kind of broken.
Are they?
I had one that I want to read because it's so fun.
Go ahead and read off what all the spells are.
I'll read the names and then I'm going to pick one to read that we can discuss.
Yeah.
For Bard, you've got Maypole Madness and Siphon Magic. For Cleric, you've got Primrose. Druid gets Primrose, Maypole Madness, and Mumbling Maggot. Paladin gets Chain of Conviction and Deny the Wicked. Sorcerer gets Cantrip is Bloodbolt, and then Delicious Wound, Crimson Nova, Mumbling Maggot, Siphon Magic, and Ghastly Charge. Warlock gets Bloodbolt cantrip, and then Pestilent Boil, Maypole Madness, Mumbling Maggot, and Ghastly Charge. And Wizard gets Mumbling Maggot, Siphon Magic, and Ghastly Charge. My favorite is Maypole Madness.
I knew you were going to say that one.
It's just ridiculous. Choose a point on the ground you can see within range. A conjured maypole erupts from this point, and each creature within a 10-foot radius sphere must succeed on a dexterity saving throw or become grappled and restrained by ribbons. If a creature fails its saving throw by 5 or more, it must succeed a wisdom saving throw or become charmed. A creature charmed in this way must spend each of its turns circling and dancing around the maypole within the sphere for 1d4 hours. Creature charmed in this way takes one level of exhaustion for each hour they are compelled to dance, though they may repeat their saving throw every 10 minutes. Charm can be ended by the remove curse or greater restoration spells or similar magic. It's just so ridiculous.
I love it. I love everything. I love everything about it.
It's just dumb, but it's fun dumb.
It's powerful.
Very powerful.
Mm-hmm. I honestly, in this case, more so than the wolf, I think this one is actually broken. I still love it, but it's broken because you fail the deck save. Okay, cool. You're just grappled and restrained. You know, that's manageable. It's by ribbons. They don't tell you how much damage you have to do, but you can, you know, everybody knows how to escape grapple and restrain checks. But the problem with it is that if it fails the save by 5 or more, it must succeed a wisdom save or become charmed. If you're charmed, all you can do is dance, and the only way to break it is by remove curse, greater restoration, or similar magic.
Or walk away with potentially 4 levels of exhaustion.
Right. This isn't broken if you're attacked. So if you are forced into that dance, I can literally just walk up to you and murder you, and it does not break the charm.
Yeah.
So that's a problem. With the wolf, the wolf was very specific, and it's going to try to devour you, and when it devours you, that will break the charm. But this doesn't have that.
Yeah. It's too good of a control spell. And it does require 2 saves to go off. I don't know how many spells are designed with 2 different kinds of saves in order to activate, in order to happen.
Normally, there are very few.
Yeah, which that isn't the big part of it. It's the dex save first, then the wisdom save. And it is very powerful ahead of that. It doesn't even break on damage. And getting exhaustion in a new system isn't that big of a deal. That's just -4 to all your stats for like a day or something. But that's, you're almost dead in the current 5e rules, you know? So I don't like it from that respect. And on top of that, there's no like cost component other than a brightly colored ribbon. This spell could be as powerful as it is if it required 100 golden, a golden rod worth 100 gold or something like that. You know?
It's, yeah, it's a 4th level spell. So it's not like we're talking most, you know, low level people are going to have it.
Yeah, you're going to be 7th level before you could cast this.
Yeah, but it's very powerful. You cast that on a group of people in the middle of town, a bunch of commoners.
Well, if you're casting this shit on commoners, I don't care if it's going to be able to kill them.
No, what I'm saying is like that's like the setup to the story. Is a big bad just casting all around town, and everyone's now dancing around maypoles, and they're all going to die. I don't know. It's just, there's a couple other spells too that just seem very overtuned. What was the other one that you read?
Was it Pestilent Boil?
Maybe.
When you cast a spell, a pestilent boil grows on your skin for up to a minute. For the duration, you may use a bonus action to take 1d4 necrotic damage. When you damage yourself in this way, your boil festers and damage equal to the amount you've taken. Damage may not prevent it. No, it's not that one. I know what you're talking about, and I can't. Was it Delicious Wound, maybe?
But yeah, it was Bloodbolt, and there was another blood-based one.
There were two blood spells. There was Bloodbolt and then Crimson Nova.
That's it. Those two. Read Bloodbolt first.
Wave of blood. Bloodbolt is you throw a bolt of blood at a creature that you can see within range. Make a ranged spell attack against the target. On a hit, the target takes 1d6 necrotic damage. Target must make a constitution saving throw. If the target fails, you regain hit points equal to half the damage dealt.
All right.
Now, on paper, that doesn't sound bad. Okay. In the creative hands of the motherfuckers out there that have this as an ability, they're like, oh shit, I need a lot of health really quick. Where's the orphanage? Hey, you can summon squirrels, right? Summon a herd of squirrels for me, please. Blam, 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 blam. Getting all your health back.
Or just take a short rest. I mean...
Well, we're out of short rests, you know.
I don't care that you could heal yourself off a fucking orphanage or squirrels. I do not care.
You may not care. I think it's a little broke.
You know, if you go to an orphanage and as your PC and you kill all the orphans using this spell, I'm going to hunt you down with NPCs and you're going to end up making a new character. It's that simple.
I'm just saying is that I don't think there should be a cantrip out there that heals you. Even if you have to damage something, I don't think that it should heal you. Because as you're targeting a creature, puppies are creatures, going to the farm, a bunch of sheep are creatures. Hey, can I buy a cow real quick? Bam, 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 bam. Oh, I got my health back. And then it gets worse when you read Crimson Nova.
All right, I'll read Crimson Nova. Third level necromancy. Range is self, 15 feet. A wave of blood crashes into your enemies. Each creature within 15 feet of you must make a dexterity saving throw. A creature takes 3d10 necrotic damage on a failed save or half as much on a successful one. You and a number of creatures affected by the spell up to your spellcasting ability modifier that you choose restore hit points for half the damage you rolled. Okay.
Okay. So you see nothing wrong with that spell?
No.
Okay. Read the beginning again.
A wave of blood crashes into your enemies. Each creature within 15 feet... they need to reword it.
So you're using this. Blam! You hit you and all your allies. Everyone takes 3d10. And then hopefully your allies save, because then they can get back the hit points they just took in damage.
Yeah. But it's poorly worded, but I understand what the idea is. So, yeah.
Now, this spell, healing people, it's same as that stupid, horrible one from Strixhaven. Like, I get it. I'd rather it just proc a healing a hit die to heal you instead. That way you're using up resources for the heal. Another resource for the heal, essentially, because you're using a spell slot and a hit die. But it's a lot of damage. 3d10 is a bit on the high side for third level. It's not fireball levels of damage, but it's still pretty high. And
there's high upside and low downside. Like you might get 3 points of damage, or you might get 30 points of damage.
Yeah. So they need to fix it so the allies are somehow not included in it.
Yeah.
Or else you're basically hurting them and healing them immediately. And there was also another one too, that was a druid spell, I believe.
Primrose or Mumbling Maggot. I read Mumbling Maggot, and that one didn't seem like a problem at all, so it's probably Primrose.
Well, Primrose gives your spellcasting modifier to initiative rolls, which... when you roll initiative, you don't have a reaction to spend.
Well, it says you do here, so you do.
You don't.
I mean...
When you roll initiative, you're still outside of combat. You don't have actions, bonus actions, reactions.
Yep.
Outside of combat.
Well, you're burning whatever reaction you would have for that turn to do it. Probably needs to be reworded or some such, or maybe just remove that casting time. But
so you can't take a reaction outside of combat to cast that unless you're during initiative. There were a couple abilities that do trigger, but they don't burn the reaction. I'm thinking maybe it was just the Maypole Madness. It was just the insane druid spell that was just like, okay, yeah, beat all the whole campaign with that. A couple of them are weird, but very complicated. Pestilent Boil is just weird and complicated where you got the boil on you, and then you pop the boil and you do damage to yourself. And yeah, then
I can tell these, the people who put this thing together, they played a lot of third edition. I can almost assure you, because a lot of these spells, from what I'm seeing, it harkens back to third ed. And obviously, in my opinion, that's a great thing. There should be a lot more spells from third edition that have been pulled over. Now, mind you, a lot of these are not from third. They're just reminiscent of it.
Mm-hmm. Martyr is kind of interesting as a third level red spell.
Choose a creature that you can see within range that has died within the last minute. It returns to life with hit points equal to your current hit point total. You immediately drop to zero with two failed death saves and must immediately make a death saving throw. I like it. You know, it's risk versus reward.
Yeah, but it also is too. It's, oh shit, he just died? All right, you gotta heal? Okay. Blah, heal. It's outside of combat, it's easily abused. In combat, not so much, you know.
Outside of combat, sure, it won't be. Yeah, it'll just do its thing. In combat, assuming everybody knows when everything goes in initiative order, then you can safely use it. Even if not, assuming that the enemy goes next or whatever, you then have to hope that the DM doesn't just kill you.
I mean, if the DM's killing you on death saves, and I'm guilty of this myself, I'm sorry, Shelly. you're trying to prove a point or teach a lesson. No one drops and the DM hits you with magic missiles unless they're trying to kill you. So I just think that this spell can't be used outside of combat. If it's used in combat, I'm fine with it. Outside of combat, you're just getting a free res.
In combat, I see it
cost something.
I see it the opposite way almost. Like in combat, I see this as causing more difficulty. Because whoever's going to cast it is going to have to spend that time to figure out where they go in initiative order, and then if the DM gets to go before the party members, then they're going to be putting that dungeon master in a difficult spot of, do I hit the down body? And if I'm the DM and I'm playing a paladin or a cleric who would know what that spell is, yeah, I would definitely go finish off the guy who just dropped from it.
Oh, he's trying to save you.
Yeah, exactly, yes.
Sorry.
I mean, I am the asshole who will counterspell the heal spell.
I've never done that.
I've definitely done that. I've done it plenty.
Well, I've actually lied, I've done it. I've done it quite a bit, actually. People don't come back to the game after I've done it. Overall, this playtest is fantastic. I really don't have an issue with pretty much like 80% of it. And like I said, the 20% that I'm griping about is just like things have to be a little bit more clarified, or that's a little too broken. Dial it back a little bit. But that's what a playtest is for. So ultimately, yep. I don't see an issue with a lot of things. There's some things that may look really good on paper, but are definitely going to get broken in game. I think the races just have a lot of abilities. Yeah, they're flavorful, so you kind of give them the pass, but I don't really have any problems. I really want to play this setting. I really want to kind of go through and do it. It really is going to be pen and paper, though. Unless someone spends a lot of time putting us in a VTT. And I know that they were concerned about...
Oh no, you might have to sit down with people across from a table. Like, whatever show you do.
Not do that and do it on the VTT and take up more of my time. But I think this is a really good start. I'm really excited to see what they have next in playtest number two. I want to see some fighter stuff. I like this druid. He needs a little bit more balancing, but I like the druid a lot. So Shelly, since you spent $600,000 on this, how do you feel?
I didn't buy the top of the line one. I wanted to, but I didn't.
Did you go in the 150 like I did?
No, I went for the one above that. That's
okay.
Like
okay. So you got the collector's one. Cool.
Yes, I got the collector's one, and I backed the right time to get the extra dice, both sets, and I just did the survey. What else did I get? A little crow stuffy. But yeah, I got everything that came with the deluxe one. I'm very excited.
Yeah, you'll get the really nice covered books. Whereas me, I'm going to get the basic shit.
And I mean, just from the pictures of what they had, it looked really cool. I'm very excited about it. This is something that I could definitely see myself being able to like sit and run an actual like campaign with, not just do a couple one shots like I've already done, you know, and actually sit down and have a whole campaign and have like a whole story, you know, if they do everything they say they're going to do, that's, it feels like it could be something just totally different than, you know, what I'm used to playing. And it just feels like it would be a really, really fun experience.
Yeah. My only hope is that they added a lot more feats. I don't know what they did with that. I know they were adding a whole thing for cursing, which I'm really interested to see how that's going to work. But I hope they add more feats, because feats are where the customization of characters takes place.
Yes.
It's the reason I love Pathfinder so much. We were supposed to play a Christmas one-shot this weekend in Pathfinder. We're going to be fifth level. And because Pathfinder 2E is so customizable, I was able to make a character that you just cannot actually build in 5E. It is fucking impossible. So, you know, unfortunately, we didn't get to play because the DM ended up with COVID, but we should still get to play in 2 weeks before Christmas. So, here's hoping. So, anyway, my hopes with this is that they add a lot more feats. That way, characters are even more customizable and you can make them a little different.
Yeah, I feel like there's enough here to start with that you're just getting like a taste of what they have the capabilities to do. Mm-hmm. So if they keep adding to that part of it, I think that's going to make it a lot more successful.
Yeah, it looks good. I'm really kind of excited for this one. I wasn't going to back the Kickstarter, and literally like the week it was about to end, I started getting commercials for it all over YouTube and Facebook and everywhere else. And literally the day it was ending, one of them popped up and I heard that goddamn song again. You know, because they had that music playing, and every time I'd hear it, it made me want a Kickstarter, and they finally got me, the sons of bitches.
I think I backed, like, day two or something like that. Something, it was ridiculously early. I saw it, and I'm backing this. Yeah. And they had already hit, like, 2 million or something like that at that point. Like, it was something crazy like that. And I was like, yeah, I think I'm going to get in on this one.
Yeah, and, like it. It's the five. It's because it was 5E. I wasn't interested in it, but they still managed to get me in. So,
I mean, the nice thing too is if this is successful and you know as successful as they're you know hoping to be, there's plenty of room for changes in the future, even.
Like you know, I would say
that somebody couldn't adapt it for a different edition.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I could, if I don't like what I see for 5E, I can easily just run this as Pathfinder. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because all I would have to do is sort of change the races and the classes we can kind of make work. So, because of the customization of that setting, most of what's here, you can easily convert over.
I just can't wait to play Jack Skellington.
Of course. I just can't wait to kill people with a three-eyed goat.
yeah, I do want to see more monsters. That's where I'm very interested in is
after seeing the first one. Yeah, really want to see a lot more now. All about the
big monsters are the big scary monsters.
Yeah, because they should have monsters up to 20th level at least.
Well, just what they had from the SVG files for the minis that they were offering, like there's gonna be some really spooky shit. Like I'm looking at the campaign now. They've got a huge they got a Wicker Man mini. They've got like it said, I'm trying to find the stretch goals. They had something that said what the okay, so they've got the Wicker Man with minions. They've got the Horn King with minions, the Beast of Blight with minions, the Ghost Train with minions, the Chained Reaper, the Lord of Fools, the Weeping Widow, the Grinning Sinner, the Coven Abomination, the Crimson Abbot, and the Harvest Terror, which is very spooky.
Those all sound amazing.
Yes, like they really are. Just the mock-ups they have are very cool.
All right, Waples family, you guys got anything else to add before we wrap this thing up?
I hope it's as great as you guys want it to be.
That's a very Christopher answer.
It is.
Well, I'm excited for it. I'm jealous of them and all their success, and I wish I was basking in their glory. But hey, sirrah, sirrah, I guess, or something. I don't know.
Yep. Well, next week we get to talk about the MCDM role-playing game. I'm sure you're really excited about that one.
Which I've been told is like right up my alley for things. So we'll see. I don't know. I doubt I could get Shelly to play it. I think.
What's it about?
It is a narrative type system. So you do a lot of talking and role playing.
That doesn't answer my question.
I know.
Let me see. I don't. Damn it. I had it pulled up and then I closed it because we weren't talking about it today.
You asked.
MCDM Backer Kit. Let's see. I'll give you the very brief. Once I find out where the very brief thing is at.
Gosh, man, professional podcast.
I know, right? Well, I had it pulled up, and then we're like, oh, we're going to talk about Crooked Moon today. And that's what we talked about. It's fantasy role-playing. It's D&D-esque where you are your heroes. You're like these fucking uber heroes. It's got its own system, so it is not 5e, which that alone interests me, the fact that it's another system. Yeah. That's the basics of it.
I'll look into it.
Yep, I'll just sit here and keep waiting for my Sky Raiders of Abraxas to show up.
Yeah, I know, right? They released another PDF a while back, and I looked through it, and it was like the same PDF. So I don't know.
Yep, I've almost resigned myself as that's going to be a Kickstarter that never comes to me.
Oh, I have zero doubt that I'll get that Kickstarter. Will that Kickstarter be as good as I had hoped? Probably not.
I don't think it's ever going to come out.
Yeah. Anyway,
I am Lord Pessimism. I have spoken.
That is an accurate statement. All right, guys, I think we're done here. Thanks for hanging out, Shelly. Always fun to chat with you.
Thanks for having me.
Bye, Craig. Bye, Shelly. Bye, Jay.
Bye, Craig.
Bye, guys.